Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we are here for the 500th episode of our main show, which is an accomplishment. Yay. But also, look, we've produced so many shows, divided up so many shows that, you know, these numbers are going to grow faster than they used to. So we thank you all for just listening all these years. We're going to have a lot of fun breaking down news from a long time ago and also breaking down follow-up stories to stories we only had a small percentage of the information when we talked about it last week, which we're happy to get that. You have listened long enough, you know, we record on Monday, release on Tuesday, and usually information or news drops on Tuesday afternoon or right after we release. So it is what it is, but we get a chance to talk about that stuff today. We're going to talk about awards. We're going to talk even about some of the controversies in the Star Wars world the last week or so. But before we do all that, well, I want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, whoever 4center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Busy holiday weekend. Parties, travels, pumpkin carvings, who knows what. A lot going on in our lives, and I know a lot going on in the lives of all of our listeners out there. Jen, we're going to start with you because I imagine you probably had some fun carving okay. something.
Yeah, I'm literally staring at three pumpkins that were not carved this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, my one daughter is really, she's a great artist. She doesn't understand that, like, you can't do elaborate designs. Well, some people can, but we're not there yet to be able to do these elaborate designs. So she was kind of frustrated. So we just scrapped that maybe another time. But this weekend, actually, I watched Tales of the Jedi, the first episode, the Ahsoka baby episode, as I'm calling it, with my two girls. And I did it because I wanted to get their take on it. I wanted to see how they would react. I prepped them beforehand. I was like, there's going to be a scary looking creature, saber-toothed tiger type creature. Don't worry. It's going to have a happy ending. But they were like, they were worried. They were like, no, not the baby. Not the baby. Oh, but they loved it. They loved it.
Good.
And that's kind of what I wanted to see. If it, you know, my 7-year-old was like, that's it? I thought there was going to be more. So, well, there is more, but I won't make you watch that. But yeah, that was neat.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, I really want them to watch the Dooku episodes just to hear how you prepare them for that. There's going to be a very scary man. He has good intentions, but he's making bad choices.
Yeah, I knew that they would not be able to handle. They'd be like, what is going on? Who is this man?
Spooky choices.
Right, exactly. They're a little too young for that. But yeah, I asked my 3-year-old, what was your favorite part? And she said, when the baby got taken. Okay. My 7-year-old liked it when, you know, Ahsoka obviously used her powers to tame the beast. My daughter loved that. And she loved the animation style, which I also loved as well.
Oh, yeah. It's just gorgeous. Beautiful. Yeah. I really love that your daughter likes conflict right away. You know what? The danger. That's what I liked.
Baby Ahsoka's pretty cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She is. Yes. Ah, wonderful. Wonderful. Less pumpkin carving than I would have hoped for, but we'll work on that next year, Jen. We just get the fancy designs in there. I was doing some traveling this week, but you were traveling around town, it looks like. Star Wars Adventures for you.
Yeah, no, I had a busy week. I feel like my voice should be as gruff as you is yours, Ken. Yeah. Your voice sounds like you had an action packed weekend.
I did. You know, I'm feeling a burn, but it's good.
Excellent. Yeah, no, I had a really busy week. It was the vote forward deadline where we actually sent the letters that I've been talking about for a long time. So I wrote I wrote 300 letters this year and sent them. So that was great. My wife and I kind of had our Halloween weekend fun. We went to a showing of the 1931 Frankenstein with live opera music, which was really great.
Wow. Yeah. That looked so cool.
It was so cool. That theater downtown, the Ace Theater, the theater at the Ace Hotel is just beautiful. And they had it dimly lit. And it was really like the Frankenstein monster is going to come around the corner, right? Excellent. Great. It's a good mood. Good mood. We went to the carved event at Descanso. There was a great Obi-Wan Kenobi pumpkin that I want to post about because they do the pop culture pumpkins. Great stuff. So yeah, really, really fun Halloween weekend. I love Halloween. It's pretty much my favorite holiday. So I look forward to celebrating even more when we're done recording. But the thing I really wanted to be sure to talk about is we've been talking about releasing this short film that I worked on. It is called Peace Fight, and it is out now on YouTube. It features me, but it also features Mr. Ken Nabsok and our friend Mark Ellis, and I've been really, really happy with the response to it so far.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah, I know you've been talking about it. It is like a short film. Like I was so impressed with like the cinematography and your guys' acting. I literally, oh my gosh, when you, I don't know whose voice that was that made that noise.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And your reaction, I told you, I literally spit out my water when you spit out your martini from laughing. Oh,
that's so great. Yeah, there's some amazing vocalizations that are Mark Ellis doubled and backwards is the the magic there, but that's all Mark Ellis. So thank you everyone who has subscribed lately to YouTube and who has watched the video. I'm going to take a page out of the lessons of Star Wars and not be afraid to ask for help. So the video is doing really well. I was really happy with the response, but I really want to build YouTube, which means getting more viewers and more subscribers. And I have a goal to get that video to 1,000 views by this coming Thursday. So it's a direct ask to 4Center fans. If you are able, if you are willing, if you don't have YouTube blocked for any reason, it's about 4.5 minutes. It's called Peace Fight. It'll come up right away if you just search for Joseph Scrimshaw on YouTube. And if 4Center listeners are willing to give it a watch and help us get it up to 1,000 views, I'd really, really appreciate that.
Yeah, do that. No, call to action. A lot of fun. A lot of fun. I always forget when my face is real close up on a camera how much I don't like it. So
it's been really fun to sometimes right before we record, I'll have been like editing and tweaking on that. And it's always that weird thing when you are spending time with the image of a person and then you're actually suddenly talking to them. It's like, Ken, haven't I just spent the last hour with you? Like changing the angle and the, you know, filter on your face.
I wish you could change the angle and filter every day.
You are a charming, compelling human being, and it comes across. You look great.
No, it was great. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun to see it. Yeah, no, and I think you're right, Joseph. And I don't know about you, Jen, but I think we're all from the same generation, same cloth. Where we're just sometimes really afraid to say, "Hey, I've done something. Do you mind watching it or listening to it?"
Right. Yeah. Just that kind of been trained to be like, you should just automatically be mega successful all by yourself. And that asking for help is a sign of weakness. Like, yeah. So trying to get past that.
Yes.
Yeah. No. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Good stuff indeed. Well, full weekend for you. A full weekend for me too. Traveled actually with Mark Ellis to Seattle and up to the smaller suburb of Edmonds, which is a great town that we love staying in. He has family in the area. And we had one big show at a historic venue in Seattle called the Crocodile downtown. And I want to thank all of the 4Center fans who tweeted me about Seattle's crime rates and situation after I shared the reality that my mom and I are fighting over the reality of Seattle. Like any big city, certain areas are a little less appealing than others. But for the most part, man, downtown Seattle is a lot of fun on a Friday night. Vibrant people out eating, restaurants in the area. Mark and I walked around in the cold. It was about 50 degrees cold for us. Had a great time. Met some 4Center fans and friends who were out there coming to the show. Sean, his buddy Cade, Clint. And there was a great guy. I think his name was Caleb. Oh, I probably got that wrong. I usually try to write them down so I can remember. We're in the audience, a small, intimate show. And we had talked some Star Wars after, and that's always fun. Always fun. In this era, you know, Ellis and I spent a whole weekend going, much like what Joseph said, like, how do we get our word out that we exist in this world? Twitter's something else right now. I signed up for Mastodon this weekend and probably unsigned in an hour. I have to wait to see how that looks. I got confused. Like, how do we let people know we exist? TikTok, is that? Are we talking? Right. Good to have 4Center friends out there. A lot of fun. And all through the weekend, Star Wars always comes up. My niece, who's now 10, my mom sent me some video, speaking of the good family stuff. Her favorite character is Darth Vader, not Anakin. Darth Vader. She went for as Halloween as Darth Vader, and I had sent her like a gift bag of books, of Star Wars books, including some of the ones we've talked about here, you know, the Path of the Jedi stuff, stickers, all that kind of stuff, that new Ashley Eckstein book with Kelly Knox, everyday Star Wars stuff. It was a lot of fun, and it's a lot of fun. It happened organically. I don't get the chance to talk to my niece all the time, and it just happened organically that she discovered Star Wars on her own. And my sister and grandmother are like, "Oh, well, you should hear what your uncle does." That's like a lot of fun. And Jen, this is kind of a question for you. Like, what do you do when your kid's like, "I love Star Wars, and my favorite character is the greatest villain of all time"? I guess you just kind of let that go, huh? Too early to teach lessons.
Yeah, you because for them it's like it's empowering, right? To be this incredible villain, this powerful character, and there's so much merch, that's great. There is something, especially with like the helmeted characters, like Boba Fett. My kids have loved Darth Vader, and lean in. embrace yeah. it.
Yeah, but no, she had the mask on and everything, and
awesome. You know,
and she had a Kylo Ren lightsaber, which I wanted to text my mom. That is not what you're supposed to do. That's not canon, which will lead into a discussion that we're going to have here right now about canon and retcon and all those things. Which is funny. It's funny, like, my gut reaction is that, well, that's the wrong lightsaber. Well, it's not the wrong lightsaber. It's her lightsaber. It's what she wants. And it was a lot of fun. So, busy weekend. Thanks to all those who came out again to see the show and talk Star Wars after it. Mark and I really appreciate that there. We'll be back. We loved the Crocodile. It was a very fun event, a very fun place. We do want to, though, talk about some of the stuff going on with the in and around Tales of the Jedi. Some important conversations, some important debate and discourse, some frustrating at times. And I think I reacted very strongly to some of the discussions early on, but it's also only one part of the discussion. We want to get the full picture in. And also, it's weird. Joseph and I pre-recorded our Tales of the Jedi review. Something, Joseph, we don't really do a lot around these parts.
No, it really was because we were lucky to get the screeners and Tales of the Jedi and Andor were coming out at the same time. And it made it really hard to cover them both, which is really the only reason that we got a jump on it and talked about it before really much of any fan reaction.
Yeah, which is both good. And we could just give our peer reactions. And also I feel sometimes like, oh, if I had known that would have been the trending topic, we would have maybe discussed it a little differently or looked at it from another way. So we'll discuss a little bit now here. Quick summary, the episodes come out. I think they're very well received. We particularly here love all of them, but the Dooku ones I found particularly important. And just these wonderful pieces of reflective art, philosophical Star Wars about injustices and how you react to them and all those kind of things that we broke down. But there was this issue of retconning. That word gets thrown around a lot. Things about when Dooku left the Jedi Order, Obi-Wan's hair, when did he grow back the mullet? And a lot of it, I'll start by just saying it rankled me because I felt with Andor and particularly these Dooku episodes, we had some wonderful, important episodes. The Andor stuff, directly political, related to our times. Dooku stuff, deeper philosophical look, which might, if you understand it and unravel it and pull it apart, might help you us avoid tougher times in the future and how Star Wars can speak to that kind of stuff. And I thought it was buried by some of the questions around, well, when did Dooku leave and why was he there? And why was this retconned? And that term retcon, which is, man, often misused. And so I got a little upset too, lost my way, got a little dark. Little dark Jedi energy there. But then there's the other issue of the chapter 6, of course, is a adaptation, retelling of the events from the Ahsoka novel by E.K. Johnston, or based on the notes that Filoni had provided to publishing for that novel to be made. And in the process of that is the conversation around the character of Cadine and her sister not being in the short. And the idea of representation, you had a queer character of color, not in the animated version. So then it was less about, well, all right, we got retconning, which is a separate conversation. But in that you had this important conversation emerge. So Joseph, I'll start with you here on overall thoughts diving in. And there's a lot to break down. We don't want to spend a ton of time on it today. It's not a deep dive episode, but we felt Media Force Center needed to talk about.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is that it is a multifaceted issue, and I think you touched on a lot of different perspectives to it. There's the just sort of engagement, right? The Tales of the Jedi is full of deep ideas of what it means to be a Jedi and socio-political ideas and Dooku understanding problems but reacting poorly versus Ahsoka's choices. All these great things, right? And I think especially at Force Center, we want that to be the focus because we love diving deep and we love getting ideas that can help us in real life. But then we can be like, but okay, but how can Obi-Wan have the mullet? We mentioned that. That's fun. Yeah. So there's this level of an engagement. What level do you want to engage on? Then there's the things that like don't matter too much about, Obi-Wan regrew a mullet. Okay. Or he didn't. And you can agree or disagree. Yeah. Right. Then there's this larger issue of it has happened multiple times now where events from the publishing side, from books and comics, have been retold and the spirit remains the same. Who the characters are and the choices they make and why remains the same. But the details of, exactly when, with who, what planet, what date change. So that's an issue. And then I think deepest and most important, there's the issue of characters who are diverse and great for representation in the publishing side disappearing. So I think it's just important to kind of, even from the get-go, acknowledge that you're talking about multiple things so that fans don't misfire by one person being upset about one element of this and not being in the same conversation. What part of this are we talking about, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, that's where I start. I pulled a couple interview clips in press releases just to kind of try to clarify the parts of the discussion, right?
Yeah.
There's the, okay, things from publishing are being adapted. Here is an interview from Filoni from this October 26th that was on Nerdist. It's about Tales of the Jedi. Here is the clip. Filoni says, I was doing these three pieces, one when she, Ahsoka, was very young, one that covers the formative years of the Clone Wars and her training, and I needed a piece that was somehow set after as a result of it. Playing with so much of her history as I have over the years, it was just natural to say, okay, well, I'll explain how she got back into this. It's based on the same outline I gave publishing for the novel. It was always the same story. It's like, that's just a bit of clarity. From Filoni, he gave an outline to publishing for the novel. This is an adaptation of what he feels is the same story. So there's a sort of just like here to me, that's a starting point of here's the what's happening is as of right now, Star Wars is going to take some stories from publishing and adapt them. They're not going to be the same as publishing. Mm-hmm. That's just a truth right now. Mm-hmm. And now we have a choice as fans, as individuals, how do we react to just that before we even get into the representation part of it, right? Mm-hmm. That are you okay with that? Does it diminish your interest in the novels and comics? Is there a polite and productive way to tell Lucasfilm that diminishes your interest? You know, I think to me, that's like the starting point is accepting, yep, it is happening. Mm-hmm. And now how do we make it a productive conversation? And I'm just going to read one other thing, and then I will hand the release the talking saber. So another big part of this is I've seen so many tweets of saying like, but didn't Lucasfilm tell us that everything was connected? Isn't that why for years and years and years we've deeply invested in the publishing side, in the books and comics, because this is all canon? Here's the actual Del Rey press release from April 25th, 2014. It says, going forward, Lucasfilm has begun mapping out the narrative future of Star Wars storytelling that will appear on film and television and in other media so that all projects will benefit from real-time collaboration and alignment. The future Star Wars novels from Disney Publishing Worldwide and Del Rey Books will now be part of the official Star Wars canon as reflected on upcoming TV and movie screens. With the establishment of the Lucasfilm Story Group and our even greater focus on unified storytelling, we expect our entire publishing program to be stronger and more meaningful than ever, said Janine Mosher, Senior Vice President and Group Publisher, Disney Publishing Worldwide. We're extremely excited to kick off this new strategy with Del Rey Books. I probably didn't need to include that last bit of, of you know, excitement. But I guess, to me, I just wanted to share that because I think that... This is a direct statement that, yep, it's all tied together. And I personally do understand fans who feel frustrated by that because there has been a change and it hasn't really been acknowledged. How we handle that, if it's a productive conversation, if it's a kind and listening conversation, that's up to all of us. But I do understand that, yep, it was stated that it was kind of all connected. And now we're moving into this time of it already happened, but the stories are going to be adapted and changed.
I loved hearing that quote, by the way, because a lot of time because there's a Kathleen Kennedy quote around the same time that maybe gets confused with that one or used in lieu of that's a simpler. I think it's like a press like yay all the books account or something. I can't remember that, but I think that one's a very valuable quote. Jen, I do want to get you in here. I understand that you haven't necessarily finished all of Tales of the Jedi. But you've been around these parts for a while here. The topic of representation obviously very important to you as well as it is to us here at Force Center overall. But the canon of it all, what general thoughts on what's going on here?
Mm-hmm. I think for us fans that have been around the block, we've seen a lot of changes. And I'll tell you what, when I saw Yub Nub, when I saw Lapti Nek being replaced, it, that was really, and I'm not, I'm being totally serious. That was when I was like, oh, I'm not in charge here. I have my affinity and my love for these things. But if the creator wants to go and change things, that is their right as the creator. I can respond, and I have over the years with various videos and silliness, expressing my displeasure with that, right? So I'm not going to even talk about the representation thing just yet. But so that really kind of prepped me. And I remember even way back in the day, it was always George Lucas will have his you know, the Clone Wars, and he would have his movies. That's always going to be the ultimate canon. And the novels obviously falls under that, right? And I think they've done a really great job since the sale to make everything more cohesive. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of fans who are only watching the TV shows and the movies, and they're not reading the novels. And so if the creators who are making those shows want to go and do things that are slightly different, it's okay. It's fine with me because they're the creators, right? It doesn't diminish my enjoyment of reading the novels, but it does make me think about how I approach it. Right. I'm not going to be so like married to whatever is in the novels, knowing that it could change. But I think it becomes a little bit problematic when you do have such great representation in the novels and the comics. And then if that's erased on screen, that is an issue. And I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and believe that I don't think that they really thought about that, which is an issue in and of itself. Right. I don't know. But at the same time, if Dave Filoni presented this outline to E.K. Johnston, then in his mind, he's like, well, this is actually what I initially intended. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, 100% makes sense.
You know what I mean? So it's like, in his mind, he's like, well, I'm not erasing it. This is, I already had my own ideas. She went off and did her own thing, but I already had my ideas, and I'm guessing he already had this all kind of mapped out. So I just think it's a tale of two creators, really.
Very much.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
I think that's like a really great breakdown, because I think it's a how do you approach storytelling? How do you approach the idea of, you know, a creator is going to make changes? That's a huge part of the history of Star Wars, right? That stuff is all about storytelling and how we approach storytelling, right? And then it becomes a different discussion when it's about representation, because then that gets into like very real world impacts. So, you know, if the representation sort of erasure of a gay character and a you know, person of color character hadn't happened, I think we might just be talking about how do we feel about the fact that this story exists? Ahsoka went on this journey and made these choices for these reasons. It's the same story emotionally with a different adaptation. But since there's this representation thing, to me, I feel like that is in some ways the most important conversation. I would assume it's just an absolute oversight. But I think that's where we get into it. If people are reading the books and the comics and they're investing in characters and they're seeing themselves in the publishing side, and then live action or I guess just on screen comes along and says, actually, that thing that you were deeply invested in for really real, really human reasons is dust that can be blown away. I think I really understand how that might hurt people, might affect people. And I think that, in my opinion, it's fine to adapt the stories. It's fine that Cobb Vanth is, the details are different, but the story is the same. That's fine as long as there isn't this kind of erasure.
Yeah, I think that is the most important thing to come out of this. There is, you know, if you're looking at what exists and you're going to make any kind of adaptions for live action, number one, I am really fine with that. But looking at it and making sure that at best you're just maybe tone deaf and you got to plug in a little bit more, or at worst, you're just completely oblivious, you know, to the changes you're making and how it might affect other people. Like you just said it really well, Joseph. In publishing so far is where Star Wars has found its most diverse representation on the publishing side, comics and books. And so why wouldn't you feel slighted and put second on the list as a fan if you saw yourself in there, whether it be Singer back in the day to Kadeen to this character and any going forward. Yeah, you would have more than a right to be upset at whatever the level above that is. I still want some of the conversations to focus on as much as we know in terms of facts. I think there's an article going around that I saw that had a lot of assumptions about why Filoni did it personally, and none of those are facts. And we don't know. We don't know. That maybe rankled me a little bit too, but at the end of the day, I just hope there could be one more lesson. Are we done with the lessons? Can we just have it be that this is what you do? You know how to adapt these things better and make sure that the representation stays, because that's the most powerful thing in it, I think, in these stories. But to your point too, Jen, that it is, I can see exactly how he probably thought that. Again, I go again. So I don't know the man in the cowboy hat, but you know, hey, it's mine anyways. Like, this is what I did. And I did not think I was going to have a chance to go back to that. I don't know. I don't want to mix the two issues up. If you're upset about Kenobi's mullet, I am upset at you right now, but I'm not upset at anyone who's upset with Kadeen being removed, you know, or not even removed, just not included in this version. Might be the actual way it happened. She's not in this version. And so then what happens to this character that's out there? And us saying, well, you always have the book, might work for old Legends fans who like Palpatine's Triclops son, but it doesn't necessarily work for someone who found themselves in that character.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I kind of feel like I'm sorry, Jennifer, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I mean, Dave Filoni is such a kind man. He's so a real creative, like genius. And mm-hmm. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, obviously, you know, and maybe this will be something to think of going forward. You know, maybe somebody will say, hey, people are a bit upset about mm-hmm. this, you know, erasure of representation. So, you know, but I do not think that in any way, shape, or form, like there was any malice or I'm going to get rid of this, you know, this important character. I just think he just probably didn't even think about that.
Yeah. It wouldn't track for Dave. It would not track for Dave personally. If you see little things about him and his life, but at the same time, with the absence of a clear reason or a fact, I understand that you're going to look at it and kind of go, well, I can only think one thing, Dave, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
I can only think of what's on the screen. And he's not on Twitter. He's not plugged in, not an excuse, just a fact. And maybe he needs to be, maybe somebody needs to tell him. And I don't know the guy, you know, it's funny hearing that article, and I don't just want to spin out to an hour conversation. I have a sense this could, I got to stop it. But reading that article, Joseph, takes me back to that time where the story group, the job of the story group, there's my comedy show voice from the weekend.
A little bit of Seattle coming out.
The story group's job, man, we didn't know then that it was less than what that press release made it sound, right? Mm-hmm. Or not less than different. We had the thought of, great, all these folks are in a room plotting out Star Wars for the next 10, 15 years. That was never the case. Mm-mm. That clip kind of makes, I can understand how in 2014 that got pulled out. And I've said before, but even the term emotional canon came from specifically the character of Zara Leonis showing up in Rebels and me just being 100% sure that had to be related to Finn. Of course, because I got told it's all connected. And then when it didn't happen, it was like, oh, that wasn't the point. It wasn't the point. And emotional canon, the spirit, the choices, everything, that's what Star Wars is about. And that was part of my journey in reacting to the way Star Wars was discussed in 2015, 2016 range on YouTube shows and everything. So it's a bigger conversation, which is why I just got upset that worrying about when Dooku left the Jedi Order hid the fact that this discussion about what was going on with Dooku and the choices he made and the important lessons in that. And that's where I got upset at the beginning, which is why I felt we want to discuss it. But there's, you know, I don't know. I can't soothe anyone, Joseph Denver, who feels like, ah, damn it. I wanted Kenobi's mullet is my favorite thing. I can't. I got nothing for you.
Well, if you're a Kenobi mullet fan, I personally, my headcanon, I mentioned this on the review, and it's nice to see other people thinking the same thing. It's like he tried to grow it out one more time during the Clone Wars, and then he decided, nope, it's really time. It's time for it to end. So if you're a mullet fan, this is rich and rewarding.
Someone who grew a mullet twice. someone who grew a mullet twice in 88 and 89, I can tell you it's possible. They come back and then you hopefully get rid of them.
But. Yeah. I think my attempt at final thoughts, I'm not going to promise, but my attempt to make these my final thoughts is, you know, I do kind of understand that, okay, this has shifted in this way from that canon announcement in 2014. And I don't know that Lucasfilm wants to come out and say, yes, publishing is now B minus canon and all that. I don't think anybody wants that, right? Because it's only going to make it more us obsess more on the details rather than the spirit and the heart and the storytelling, right? So for myself, I'm just trying to accept that books and comics are going to be adapted sometimes when they get to screen. So now that I just accept that, now I can decide how I want to react to that, and I can really be on the lookout for when is that hurtful beyond just adaptation, like in the in the instance of representation. And this is my actual final thought of, I think that I understand what it's like to, from a certain point of view, to be in a position like Filoni's. I think it's fine to look at the choices made and say, I disagree with his choice, but I'm always very careful about making too many guesses about what's in somebody's heart or head, because, you know, I've had this, the position of when I was doing a lot of theater in Minneapolis, my shows would get reviewed a lot. And sometimes it would be like, okay, you didn't like that. Fair enough. And you'd see in a paper, like this joke that Scrimshaw did about bears, it didn't work. And I'm like, fair enough. And then the next sentence is, because clearly he hates bears and doesn't understand nature. Like, what? You know, and fair enough, even on the doesn't understand nature, but the getting into your heart, he hates bears, right? Like, it's fine that you said the bear bit didn't work, but please don't assume, you know, and I think that's, for me, that's where I'm at with Filoni. Like, if it's a problem for you, point it out and then go from there.
Yeah, I actually think the bear example is both funny and kind of sums up some of my thoughts on discussion around it. But at the end of the day, my final thought, as best I can, I think there is an absolute earned right to pain, if that makes any sense, about this change or this lack of inclusion. I'll use it, a lack of inclusion. That character just isn't in this short. It's not, the character isn't gone. Character's not removed from canon. It's just not in this short. And that those hurt by that, really 100% understand. And I think you're right to feel that way. And we can only hope that things, as with Star Wars teaches us, you can't destroy the past. You can learn from it, adapt, and hopefully be better going forward. And that's what we push for here. Jen, any final thoughts? And we'll get into our actual planned news for the day.
No, but I can't wait to finish this series.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it. It's scary. Your kids will be scared. No. that Inquisitor, it's still my favorite Inquisitor design. All right. And by the way, this is an ongoing discussion. It might come up again, unfortunately, or we might have to address it again. And we will absolutely love to do that here, because we think there's a big Star Wars table and we want everyone to sit down with us at it. Looking at Star Wars news, Star Wars wins at the Saturn Awards. I was busy. I want to thank Joseph Scrimshaw publicly for pointing this out to me, because I originally missed this news story. Just had no real clue what was going on. Wow. Kind of nice to be that unplugged, but also felt that was a good story. The Saturn Awards of 2002 were held, and Star Wars had some wins. It wasn't just a picture of Hayden Christensen and Vivian Lyra Blair, which I thought, well, that was great. Did they meet at a con? I didn't know what it was. Here's some of the wins. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Best Limited Event Streaming Series. Bad Batch, Best Animated Television Series. Ming-Na Wen for Fennec Shand, Best Actress. Moses Ingram for Reva, Best Supporting Actress. Hayden Christensen, Best Guest Starring Performance. That's a lot of fun wins for Star Wars. Jenna, I want to start with you here. You keep up on the Saturn Awards?
I do not, as I told you guys before. I have no idea.
Yeah, this is like the Nick Jr. Awards. I know of them. I've been around.
Yeah, like right, exactly. I've heard the awards over the years, but I really thought they were the Canadian Emmys. I had no idea, and I was like, oh, okay, wow, Star Wars won a lot for the Emmys, but no. So, but it's exciting actually that Star Wars kind of swept the Saturn Awards, and there was some stiff competition amongst these categories, although Oscar Isaac beat out Ewan McGregor for his performance in Moon Knight.
I'll take that.
Yeah. He was great. And Ming-Na Wen actually beat out Elizabeth Olsen for WandaVision. Yeah, and Millie Bobby Brown from Stranger Things. Yes.
Amazing.
Isn't that incredible? Yeah. So, but she's had an incredible career. So give her all the awards anyways. Right. But yeah, this is really great. We need to celebrate Star Wars winning.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, I'm not someone who I always say in the 90s, I was the guy who had that Oscar Excel spreadsheet. Like I track all down to they used to be me. And if that's still you, I get it. It's kind of fun. And it's weird to see art rewarded and the competition for it all. But it's also fun to see these things recognized. And I like this list, especially for Hayden. For me, that one really struck a nice warm chord in my heart just to have him back, to have him recognized for it there. But a lot of big wins, Joseph. You saw the story. How did you react to it?
I was just really excited to see just positive news about Star Wars. And in particular, I love how much everybody's loving Andor, and I think it is different. It is taking ideas that have been in Star Wars forever, but just drilling down on them and really making people see them and feel them. And I think that's wonderful and to be celebrated. But because of, I think, some of our making everything into a competition discourse that we can have, it means that I've just seen a lot of negativity about, Obi-Wan and Boba Fett. So honestly, just seeing these shows and these performances that I personally think are wonderful and worthy of awards actually be awarded is just breath of positivity for me. I think the Bad Batch is a little bit more. You can jump in if you've never seen Star Wars, but I think it's a little bit more really, for in the bubble. That was also nice to see Bad Batch be celebrated there. Hayden Christensen, if these were Canadian awards, he would definitely
take them home.
Yeah, take them home as Canadian. But but also just, Ming-Na Wen, Moses Ingram, talking about representation, their performances are great, and it's great to see them just be celebrated. Moses Ingram had to go through a lot, and that performance is phenomenal, in my opinion. So I'm thrilled to see that celebrated. And then I think the final thing is, I'm never clear on what the Saturn Awards are either, so I remembered to look it up. That it started in 1973. They were started to celebrate the genre of science fiction that at that time lacked recognition within the established Hollywood film industry's award system, says Wikipedia. Or Wikipedia. They're different. I think for me, it's just that a big part of what Star Wars is genre. It is sci-fi. It is fantasy. It's pulling from all these pulpy adventure serial roots. And that to me is not a thing to be ashamed of. It's a thing to be celebrated. So I kind of like seeing Star Wars be celebrated by a genre award.
I agree with that. Yeah, no, and it is just kind of fun. And especially for some of these performers who had a long road to get back to it or long careers. And even though they might have been recognized before, this is, Ming-Na Wen, like you said, Jen, have her recognized for this work. It's great. And for Moses Ingram, who, experienced some hell earlier this year, just to have this kind of celebration of what she did and her part of the project and the community. I absolutely love that. And that's a great point too, Joseph, about Bad Batch. It is a little bit of the Star Wars bubble, right? It totally is. And that's fine. We don't need to be the best, most recognized show of all time. It needs to do what it just needs to do inside Star Wars. But to get recognized here, that means a lot as well. So fun story. All right. We're going to follow up on this one before we take a quick break here. Last week, we had the big news about a Damon Lindelof-led Charmin Obed-Chinoy directed Star Wars film. What fun. And we knew absolutely nothing. The press release just said that. That was what the press release said. But then we speculated. And then I think the moment after we recorded, stories started popping up. So we'll do kind of a quick summary of here and get our thoughts. Justin Britt Gibson, a story editor on The Strain, and then one of the writers on The Counterpart, has emerged from a secret writer's room to become the movie's co-writer, reports say, and a few people reporting this, Boris Kidd, I think Jeff Snyder's involved in some of the tracking of this story as well. Reports say Lindelof led a writer's room sometime after Star Wars Celebration, which I love. I just love they looked at it. Hey, you guys want to stay an extra week in Anaheim? You want to just stay here? And this included Patrick Somerville from The Leftover, Station 11, Raina McClendon, consulting producer of Obi-Wan Kenobi, writer of the upcoming Willow, one of the writers, Andy Greenwald, worked on Briar Patch, along with Britt Gibson. Dave Filoni, there's an Navy game, may also have been involved in the room in some capacity. But remember, he's directing Ahsoka during this time, so who knows to what capacity if he was there. Let's talk about, though, Justin Britt Gibson and his the secret writer's room and him emerging as a co-writer. Jen, any thoughts on that?
I'm very excited. Hollywood is about relationships. It really is. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because writer-producer Carlton, and forgive me, Coos, I think his last name, he worked with Damon Lindelof on Lost. Carlton also worked on The Strain with Justin Britt Gibson. Uh-huh. So maybe Carlton told Damon, hey, I worked with this young writer. He's great. You know, he'd be perfect for this new show. And maybe that's how they got connected. I don't know. It's a possibility. But I like the idea of a writer's room as well. I think it's so smart. I think it brings in a diversity of voices. And so, you know, looking at the movies, if you don't like J.J. Abrams, you don't like Rian Johnson, then you're probably not going to like some of their movies that they made in the sequel trilogy, right? Like, it's having all sorts of voices, I think, is really, really smart with Dave Filoni maybe popping his head in. That's kind of how I took that. Like, maybe he just, like, you know, came in for a little bit and then left. But very, very exciting.
Yeah, no, I saw it as he probably comes in, gives a speech similar to the Disney Gallery Phantom Menace speech or something, and they go, okay, yeah, because George can't do it, right? And Dave, and again, we don't know, because this is all secret. A lot of fun, though. I agree with your thoughts there, what you're saying there. It's funny, Joseph, you mentioned that comment up top, the 2014. This story took me back to that time where we kind of didn't know anything, and stories would emerge of secret writer rooms, or they're planning this. And this had that vibe of, yeah, they're planning the next 10 years. That's not necessarily true. Not necessarily what the story is saying, but it kind of, in a weird way, got re-excited for Star Wars and the Star Wars project coming forward. In a way, I haven't been the last couple of years because I've just been kind of waiting for the movie side to figure itself out. Mm-hmm. I wish it had maybe already figured itself out. Things and steps along the way, we know, well-documented. COVID probably had a lot to do with by the way, of delaying productions or thinking the way even that you can come together and work on these things. So I'm excited overall. I don't know Justin Britt Gibson, and that's the point. I didn't watch The Strain, didn't watch The Counterpart, but now I'm going to learn about him in Star Wars. And for me, that's how I get to learn about a lot of these new voices, and that kind of makes me excited. Joseph, your thoughts on this secret writer's room, and was it held at the hotel we stayed at?
I don't. That would be amazing if it was at our very modest hotel near with a little bit of a walk. I think this is really intriguing, really interesting, and great news. I guess a great reporting, not a press release from Disney or Lucasfilm. Yeah, so
correct.
Most likely accurate because it's from multiple established trades, but always worth saying that. I'm not familiar with Justin Britt Gibson's work myself. I haven't watched any of these shows, but I think it is great to have these discussions of we do need representation behind the camera, in the actual construction of the story. So we truly get those different perspectives baked into the story. So I think that is great. I think it is him as the co-writer with Lindelof is, to me, a great Star Wars tale. I think Star Wars behind the scenes should be generational, just like it is in the story, right?
Totally.
And that's the idea of Lindelof working with a younger career-wise writer. I have no idea how old Justin actually is. He's younger, in his career. And this is, I think that's good for the industry. I think that's good for storytelling for people like Lindelof who are established to help other people become established so we can hear more in different and new voices of all kinds. And then the whole idea of the writer's room is really great and fascinating to me. Lindelof in particular, I think, has this great track record now with writer's room because he kind of famously used one for Watchmen. It's a limited series event. It's a television show, not a movie. But I think it allowed Lindelof to kind of have a big picture creative vision, but really benefit from lots of different voices because he's telling a complicated story, right? And I think there's a lot of different perspectives in the story, so you need those perspectives in the room. So I think I'm excited to see that for Star Wars. And for the whole film side of it, the writer's room really makes sense to me. That we've had all these projects that are one or two people developing it. And maybe it's one film, maybe it's going to be new films, but this feels organized, right? Mm-hmm. You'd have a writer's room to kind of plot out the possibility of this is bigger than one movie. You know, I'll always like movies that are one film, one person's vision, but I think for where Star Wars is at, a team of people going, what are the possibilities, makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
This is ominous. This is a bad sign. But I'll say it anyways. There was a story years ago. I think I was still, this is the height of me covering stuff on the Schmoes. They had a Transformers writer room. They brought a bunch of great talented people together to figure out the future of the Transformers film. You had the Bumblebee movie, which I think came out of that, I think, and a lot of people did like.
That was great.
Yeah, so going forward, I don't know. But I say that it kind of harkens back to that era of movie news, too, about 5 years, 6 years ago. And I think everything you said is right, Joseph. And again, the importance of having a diverse writers' room, maybe that means someone's going to go, hey, you know, so if we take that thing from the book, that character means something to me, and I don't want that character changed. That's why you have that kind of stuff around the diversity behind the scenes, not just on camera or on screen. Speaking of that, the film is said to be, that is quite a statement, said to be. Who's saying it? We don't know. Mon Mothma would ask you. The film is said to be a standalone that could lead to more installments and might be set after The Rise of Skywalker, but not a continuation of the Skywalker saga per se. There's two thoughts to come out of this here, Jen. Thoughts on the approach of doing one movie that could lead to more, and then thoughts of going post Rise of Skywalker.
I think that they're being very cautious with how they're talking about it. I'm sure that they are hoping it'll be a huge hit, which will lead to more, but I think that they don't want to set up expectations. They want to set themselves up for success. And I think that's smart, right? I think that's smart. Thoughts on going beyond The Rise of Skywalker, also another smart move, because that can take place, you know, 5 years, 100 years. Mm. It's so wide open. And I think that that's where we're headed, right? With the Acolyte, obviously the High Republic, we're going away from like legacy characters, and obviously they can mention legacy characters. There might even be some cameos, but they're not going to rely on it. And I think that that's smart. It's going to open it up to newer fans, younger fans, if everyone can jump on board and you don't have to know Star Wars canon or fit it in a really tight timeline like we've been kind of dealing with right now with Andor, which I love, but it is a tight timeline, right? We know where we came from. We know where it's headed.
Look, there's a lot of books and there's a lot of comics. All due respect to those fans. There's a lot of real estate taken up by those stories. And so what you're talking about legacy characters, Jen. I also think it could be called legacy eras, right?
Prequel,
the original and sequel, and moving either way before or way after just makes sense. I kind of hope it's post. I'm just intrigued, even with Rogue Squadron, wherever that might have been or where that could end up being. I don't know. I'm intrigued by that. And I'm intrigued with someone like Lindelof and his creators, working in that timeline as well. And I agree with you. I think it's just simple, smart. Even if they, let's say they have 12 movies planned out, just tell me you got one. And then at this point, I do have a little bit of a cynical strain on some of this news. Even this story, even last week, I think Joseph, you had some great notes on the importance of the people involved and great thoughts on that. And that helped me because I just had a sure. Whatever. Let me know. Wake me up when it's in the theater.
Right.
And I think, you know, why not? There's a bit of a track record. And I'm, you know, I'm super positive on Lucasfilm, super positive on Kathleen Kennedy as a leader. I still believe in a lot of decisions she's made and had to make that are tough and tougher than you could imagine. But that said, hey, Wake Me Up is in the theaters. But I'm excited. I'm going to let the excitement wash over me, Joseph.
Yeah, no, I think there's reason to be excited, because I think this is an acknowledgement that we are living in a different time and that things are evolving. So, I mean, particularly with entertainment and with what belongs on a theater screen versus what belongs, on Disney Plus, and also that idea of, you know, it's not, blockbusters have gotten so big, it's really extra difficult to take the risk. There's a part of me who's been saying for years, like, they should set something in the Old Republic, not necessarily adapt existing Old Republic stories, but just do a trilogy in the Old Republic and announce it. And like, and there's a part of me that's like, well, sometimes things change, so maybe let that go. So this idea of, we are going to for sure write a story that has that is a satisfying story by itself, but has the possibility to continue, and kind of let the market respond, let fans respond. That seems really smart, to build in the possibility to go forward, but just let the first one be its own story and see what happens. And I really love going post The Rise of Skywalker because of the open field, but also because there's lots of interesting ideas to explore. A lot of the creators that we know are involved are really interested in deeper ideas of sociopolitical things, of justice, of looking at the past and reckoning with it, right? So this order, this era now where the government is entirely gone, you know, immediately after Return of the Jedi, that was the alliance to restore the Old Republic, right? We don't necessarily have that. So what is the new government? What are the new Jedi? What is the fallout for surviving members of the Force First Order? There are a lot of people out there rediscovering their roots. Who's out there trying to take advantage of this chaos? It's kind of a rich time to tell stories, even though I would love to, sure, like, yeah, let's just pick up with Finn. Let's go. He's the main character. But there's also all sorts of room to tell rich and interesting stories in this era that are not based on the main characters of the sequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, well said. Well said. We're going to take a quick break, but Jen, any final thoughts on this part of the story?
No, I'm excited. And I almost feel like, what's going to trickle out tomorrow when we put out the episode? It just feels like we're getting little morsels, right? I think even Jeff Snyder said that he's not sure what he's allowed to say. So there's more. There's more that people are holding back on. So just we'll get ready for those little crumbs.
Yeah. Knowing Jeff, I think he's always unsure of what words he should say out there in the world. Oh, love Jeff. Always does good work. I used to be in the office where we'd be making those calls like an old press man from the 1940s. Wow. So there you go. We're not done with this story. Some more stuff emerged. We're going to break it up. Before we take a quick break, we're going to give you that Force Center Recommends, an audiobook that we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what is it today?
Shockingly, it is still Padawan by Kirsten White. I almost started reading it, and then I got distracted and started reading the book version of the audio story Dooku Jedi Lost. So as soon as I finish that, we'll start reading Padawan by Kirsten White.
Hey, the book that establishes that Dooku could walk around the temple even after he left the Jedi Order. He still had a pass. I don't know what the reason is. Download your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. And then this other side, we can talk about the possible release of this so-called Lindelof film, even though there's a lot of names involved with it. Stick around for more ForceCenter.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our news fleet, if you will. The Damon Lindelof film could be released in 2025. This is some more information out there. I think, Schmodown, former competitor Jeff Snyder, was all up in this story as well, but other people talking about it as well. There are rumors that this movie could be released on that new updated release date. I believe it's December 19th, 2025, though I just remembered I forgot to confirm that the 19th was the day. Can do your homework. But anyways, December 2025 and not the 2027 date. Remember, this was updated. We had a movie in 2022. Nope, 2023. Nope, that's gone. 2025, supposedly the next Star Wars film. By the way, that could change too. Now, if so, this pushes Taika Waititi's film back. That'll be fair. We never officially known that film's release. So thoughts on this movie potentially sliding into the driver's seat on the release schedule? Because a lot of the stories say this development is moving fast. You still got Feige, you still got all the stuff there. And then thoughts on what to do with all these movies in development, because there's a lot. Now I'll even at this point throw in still the Ryan Johnson, hey, we'd love to do it, can't find time to do it films. Could we be back talking? There's a lot of like flashbacks to movie news talk in 2015 and 16. Could we be back to that 2 a year question? Would there be two Star Wars movies a year? And do we want that all in the future? That's a lot of questions dumped on the table. Joseph, what do you?
I hope this is the 2025 film to celebrate the 10th anniversary of The Force Awakens.
Oh, my.
Causes me almost physical pain to think about it that way, but that's just the truth. So you got to face it. You got to embrace it. I think to me, again, this is a report, so I am ready to be utterly wrong in everything I'm about to say, but it tracks to all of the interviews we've had that, you know, big spread in Vanity Fair with Kathleen Kennedy, and that interview was conducted like a little ways before it was released, but she was really talking about wanting to find kind of a guiding central figure for the Star Wars films in the theater, and saying that the way that Jon Favreau has done that with Mandalorian, the way Tony Gilroy's really shaping all of this Andor stuff. Fans have talked forever about a Feige-esque figure. And this one really feels like every other in development we've had has been like somebody going like, hey, yeah, sure, I'll do a Star Wars. Yeah, I got an idea. I'll do one. Cool. Right. And this feels like Lindelof is a creator who is interested in saying, I'll facilitate this. I'll be a creative voice, but this is not a this is just me. I want to bring all these other people in. I want to bring these voices in, these younger people, and I want to oversee this, facilitate this, shape this, which seems like what Kathleen Kennedy was saying she was trying to find. So I really hope that it is the 2025 film, and I kind of hope that this one, it's successful, and this starts a new era of films. I'm kind of fine if some of these in-development movies, because remember, in-development mean that could mean I had one meeting once, not even in the office. I had a Zoom call, or it could be there's a script. It could mean anything. So I think, you know, some of them will never happen. Some of them might be like a great one-off film on Disney Plus. Maybe some of them will suddenly fit into this new era that the writer's room is building. And I don't need to check the box and say, but we heard about that one. We have to see it. We have to see it. We have to see it. Yeah. I think ultimately less is might be more for Star Wars films in the theater since we have Disney Plus now. I'd love to see Star Wars in the theater become an event again.
Yeah, I think you might have changed my thoughts mid conversation. I was to the point of and I'm with. By the way, I'm with you too. There's so many talk with Dillard, J.D. Dillard's got one too, right? All along the way, this person, and yeah, absolutely, that can come and go. It's Hollywood, baby. But I'm excited if you have this much these many minds, you know, all these minds coming to work on this. I think now more than back then, I like the event aspect of it. I was like, okay, two a year would be totally fine for me. Maybe one in the winter, one in the spring or something like that. But yeah, you just got me thinking about it, Joseph. Like you got maybe the big December Star Wars time in theaters, big event, premieres, all that stuff. And then you also got this wonderful platform, Disney Plus, which I think opens possibilities, changes the pressure of the films to me. You know, I'm not saying put Taika's film on there, but you could do that. If you wanted to, and part of it's just selfish. Let's just say it is 2025, then 2027. I mean, it's a 2 year gap. 2029. By the time we get to say Kevin Feige's film in 2031, I don't want to think about that. You feel it too, of like, I don't want to be 70 going, welcome to Force Center 9000, because we finally got the Johnson trilogy. So that's why I wouldn't mind it speeding up a bit, but. I'll just out of selfish as a Star Wars fan, I do like the one event a year, but not 2 years, a year. Maybe that's the question. Can we just at least get them back to yearly? Especially so many different minds. But I'll tell you what, it's fun for the first time in a while to speculate on this kind of stuff, Jen.
Yes, I believe we're going to hit that 2025 date. I believe we're going to get it in December. It will have been 6 years since a Star Wars movie has been in theaters. Wow. That's a long time. But I think that they're being very cautious. The industry is changing, as we've talked about, with theatrical releases. Rapidly. So, you know, yeah, exactly. Rapidly. So by the time that this film comes out, this Lindelof film, who knows what the industry will be like? Mm-hmm. I think it is going to be the Lindelof film because this writer's room, because they have been meeting. It seems like they are full steam ahead. And by having all these people, I think it's going to make it easier for them to quickly figure out this story and get in pre-production. In terms of the Taika Waititi thing, honestly, I feel like Lucasfilm may be pumping the brakes on that. Maybe not that they won't do it, but you know, with the whole what was his Thor movie, right?
Love and Thunder, yeah.
Love and Thunder. There was a lot of fan criticism around the movie. It didn't quite land, I don't think, as well as the box office. So his I mean, we love him, obviously, but you know, in terms of business stuff, his luster is a little bit, you know. Anyways, we'll see what happens with that. I think that Lindelof seems like a sure bet right now.
Yeah. This is one of those, hey, we're not in those meetings conversations. And I'm a fan of Taika overall here. I didn't see Love and Thunder. Joseph, I know you did, and you had a positive reaction to it. But there's some kind of vibe that I'm getting. Again, that's not a fact. That is worse than the rumors on the internet. I just, you look at the story, you're like, huh, that's all I go. Seems like a change, which I'm okay. Pivot to something good. Pivot to someone who's roll up their sleeves in a little different manner. I don't know. There's something about, I agree with you, Jen. But this will be the first out of the game.
I think there's just like a hunger for the new. I think that is just such a big part of it. I think that's why one of the many reasons there's such a strong response to Andor. And, you know, I think people have lots of different opinions about Love and Thunder. Some people just don't think it's a well-constructed film. I love it. But it is also a very Taika Waititi film. And Taika Waititi is, he's an artist and he has a very specific flavor. And I think a part of it is just like, man, that new flavor tasted great 5 years ago. And now people are like, nah, I've had that pizza from that new place with the new style crust. I honestly think some of it is just a real hunger for the new. And that's what's exciting about what is this writer's room going to create, you know?
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. As far as the rapidly changing industry, here's what my prediction is. By 2025, you're not just going to have your subscription services at home. You're going to have a subscription to a theater. Like, are you an AMC? You're subscribed there. You got to pay a monthly fee. It's like Movie Pass, but now actual from theaters. Are you a Carmike subscriber? You a Carmike member? And that's it. And we all just go to our own theaters that we subscribe to monthly. That's my
thing. Heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
So we'll keep you all updated on this rapidly changing story. But it is interesting. Some wonderful names involved. And we'll see. By the way, again, things could change. This movie, let's say the Lindelof one gets on a fast track. F it. Put it in 2024. Like, why wait? Why wait?
Right.
So there you go. We are almost out here. Before we take a bow, we're going to look at this week in Star Wars history, looking ahead to Star Wars Past. And we're going all the way to November 5th, 2004. There was actually a lot of choices this week. This is the week that George in 1994 put pen to paper for the first time on The Phantom Menace, November 1st. This is also the week, I think it was November 3rd or 4th, that we learned the title for Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens. So a full week. But I decided to go this one. I don't know. Especially seeing Hayden nominated and then winning for the Saturn Awards. The first teaser trailer for Episode 3 was released on November 5th, 2004. Featuring Obi-Wan Kenobi's iconic dialogue from A New Hope, it set the tone for the film and its depiction of Anakin's fall. Featuring shots of Vader, the fiery duel between Kenobi and Anakin, Palpatine with a lightsaber, Wookiees including Chewbacca, and even Tion Madon. The 1 minute, 47 second trailer gave away a lot, but definitely got the fandom excited for what many believe would be the final Star Wars film. Talking about things changing. Jen, what did you think about this then? What do you think about it now? What's some of your favorite moments?
I remember back in the day thinking, my Star Wars is back. Because as I've talked about, I love Attack of the Clones now. It's actually one of my faves. But at the time when I saw it, I did fall asleep. It was a midnight showing, in my defense. I was tired, had come off of work. But yes, so, okay, you know.
Party was over, says Mace Windu.
Yeah. So, but what I loved about the trailer, and I remember getting so excited, and I rewatched it last night, and it brought all those memories back. It had the action, it had the thrills, it had the drama. Seeing Hayden Christensen finally making his turn, right into Vader, that shot of him coming up like Frankenstein's monster. I remember that so vividly. I just, when I saw that shot last night, I went, oh my gosh, the Wookiees. There was just so much to love. And it really, it feels like yesterday that I just saw that trailer. Yeah. It's kind of shocking all these years later now to celebrate it and revisit it. But just fantastic. And it also is one of my favorite films, Revenge of the Sith.
There you go. It's a favorite for a lot of folks. Joseph, 2004 time, but also just like yesterday. What do you think? What do you think about all this, especially Tion Madon?
Oh, man, I love that. I love the sort of trailers making things look like something they aren't, that because it's just that quick shot of his teeth hissing. Right. Yes. And you watch the films like he's a government dude really asking Obi-Wan Kenobi for help. But in that shot, it looks like, is he going to eat one of Kenobi's eyebrows? What's going on? He looks so vicious.
Right.
Which I love because we're big fans of Tion Madon here at Force Center. But man, back in the day, as it were, this was amazing. I think this hyped up exactly what Jennifer is saying, that connecting back to the original, right? I think the line that got me the combo is the classic Kenobi line of seduced by the dark side of the Force, and then Anakin turning and having the yellow eye. That got me so hyped to be like, oh, we're finally going to see the story we've kind of heard about since 1977, right? But even back then, when like I liked the prequels and I still kept watching them, even though I criticized them and you know, poked fun at them, that I not secretly, I liked them, but I kind of ate around the parts I didn't like back then. I like so much more of it. But even back then, this trailer just felt like, okay, not only is the original trilogy that I love being connected with coming back, like Jennifer was saying, but this is really making me feel like it's all one story, like, you know, cutting to Qui-Gon, seeing the clones from Attack the Clones, the Imperial March, Padme's, you know, Leia as Care, you know, Palpatine with his saber. Like, it was just all started to feel like all these threads are coming together, and that's so cool. So that's what got me hyped back in the day. And I remember so many friends who didn't like Phantom Menace, then they really didn't like Attack the Clones, and they spent a couple of years going, I'm just out. I'm not even watching the third one. And then these trailers came out, and they're like, okay, I'm back.
Exactly.
Both of you take me back to an exciting time. Yeah, there were that relationship with the prequels, you know, was there. That might have been complicated at best. And Jen, I think you're right. I had that feel of when I heard Obi-Wan's dialogue, which again, that Rogue One teaser at Celebration 2015 had the same dialogue. So if it wasn't focusing on the Vader part, so to speak, but focusing on the Empire part, it just felt like, that Star Wars. Yeah. Kenobi, New Hope. Just kind of felt connecting. And then your point, Joseph, of seeing Qui-Gon, I remember in 2004, already you're talking 6 years ago with Phantom Menace, and it felt nostalgic. And it was one of the first times of, maybe I saw Qui-Gon a little deeper than I had over that 6 years of being snarky on Friendster in MySpace about the prequels. So it was very effective, and I felt it. I got excited. I've talked often before that this is where you see the lava on what we would know as Mustafar, and knowing that darn Return of the Jedi novelization I mentioned a lot. It's still one of my favorites because that was there, and it was like, are we finally getting that? Oh my God, I've heard rumors that George talked about this fight on a lava planet to actually get the hint. And it is funny. I do think there's a lot revealed in this that we would maybe take more issue with now. That's just how it's all changed, the discussion around these things. I think the explosion of social media made the spoilers a little bit more hard-edged and dangerous than they were back in 2004. But I love seeing it. Yeah, and you're right. Tian Madan is perhaps my favorite part of this trailer. I too thought, who is that guy? Now, I love that guy. I've asked and answered trivia questions around him in Star Wars. I remember putting one specific question about Tian Madan just because I knew Joseph was competing, and I knew him. I'm not saying there was a cheat or a conclusion or a collusion, or I told him. I just knew that Joseph loved Tian Madan just as much as me. And a lot of it goes back to this trailer. It's not even Bruce Spence and the excellent portrayal of him in the film. It is this trailer and going, new Sith Lord? Like, what do we...
Oh my gosh, right, exactly.
What do we got?
I love how tall his head is, and I hope his head remains that tall and all the species remain that tall.
His head must remain that tall.
It was really fun to watch it. Ken, you asked about like reactions of the past and then our moments now, right? It was fascinating to watch it in the context of how would we talk about this now? Because the Vader rise in this trailer, that in the trailer does not read like that is the sad coda to the film, right?
I can
totally see how a lot of us would have been convinced then and would have had a ton of videos and podcasts about exactly what minute in the film is that. Is it the halfway mark? Is that the end of act two? But he's definitely going to rise, right? It's not presented like, yep, this is the sad end. This is the middle.
You're so right. Because now I'm looking at my own expectations that I carried into Revenge of the Sith. And that's always back then was always like, that's how Vader fell. Totally missing the part of the attachment and the importance of it all, right? That we could dive into now. But I think going back to the trailer, I think I fell victim to everyone looking up, even the Wookiees, everyone's looking up as he rises and it's like, yeah, Vader's here, as opposed to, oh, damn, Anakin fell. And I think that's what I carried into the movie. Not the trailer's fault. Not even my fault. It's just what we do.
Yeah. Jennifer, did you expect Vader to be in a lot more of the film back in the day?
Yeah, I did. as with that shot, you know, like I said, Frankenstein's monster, oh, like just walking off and starting to annihilate people. That was a surprise, but I didn't have too many expectations. And I'm glad that we did not have any reaction videos or things like that, because I would have been so wrong about everything.
Yeah. Love it.
Halfway
love
through it. The film, Vader and Tion Madan, they team up, right? And
then, exactly.
To avenge Darth Maul. the final note I want to discuss here before we wrap up this episode, I kind of overlooked it until I was kind of like writing down what was in this. Palpatine with a lightsaber. That was a pretty big reveal to me. Joseph, I turn to you for all Palpatine stuff. Yes. Did you get excited? Was that something to jump out to you?
Oh, yeah. It felt like this is the natural progression, because I played with my Yoda and Palpatine figures wondering, you know, as a kid long before the prequels, hey, they both have canes now, but did they ever have lightsabers? Did they know each other? Did they fight? And when Yoda has a lightsaber and Attack the Clones, it was like, well, of course Palpatine has one. Yeah. They trade canes for sabers, both of them.
Love that. Jen, did you have a Palpatine lightsaber thought?
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah, I was surprised, I guess. I it's so funny. I can't remember that. I do remember seeing Yoda's little face and being like, I always love Puppet Yoda. It's just a thing that I have.
I get you. I get you. All right. All that happened on November 5th. 2004, so do yourself a favor, watch that trailer again and relive it, or perhaps see it again for the first time. We are out of here today. Discuss the news, at least the news we know right now. You can find us on Twitter by going to Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast is on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Just search. You'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ken Napsok. Go to my website, KenNapsok.com. If you want to highlight this coming weekend, November 4th and 5th, I'll be in my hometown, the Central Coast Entertainment Expo, kind of a first-time event up there for the Central Coast Film Society. I'll be on a panel and be out there selling and signing books if you want to come say hi, if you live up in the Central Coast of California region, as some of you do. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for now at Jennifer Landa. If you guys are going somewhere else, let me know because I want to go there too. Or maybe we'll go down like the Titanic. My YouTube channel, where I am posting weekly Andor videos and soon to be Tales of the Jedi thoughts. I've been having fun with chatting some of you all over there. So join me at Jennifer Landa on YouTube. And of course, TikTok, Jennifer Landa 1138.
Love that. Joseph, you.
Yeah, I want to say Jennifer's Andor videos have been great. I've been really enjoying them. So, yes, I think people should check them out. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok as at Joseph Scrimshaw, and on Mastodon, some complicated thing I haven't memorized yet. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah, but I'm going to remain on Twitter for now. We shall see how it goes. Like I said at the top of the show, if you want to go to YouTube and search for Joseph Scrimshaw and watch any of my videos, but particularly this week, watch, like, comment on Peace Fight. I would really appreciate it. It will really help me with where I want to go next with some of my creative endeavors. That is much appreciated. And when this episode is coming out, it will be 1 week until voting time in America. The vote forward letters that I've been promoting have all been sent. So now I'm just going to promote, you know, voting. I think it's
voting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Got my ballot here today, and that's on my list to get that done, get that in today.
Yes.
So appreciate that. We appreciate all of you listening. We appreciate the Force Center community that you all build around us. It means a lot, and including weeks like this past week, where sometimes tougher things or things that inspire and incite maybe passions and hurt feelings and even anger at times. The Force Center community in our Discord discusses it honestly, but also with care and concern, and we really appreciate that. There you go. We'll look for more news next week to break it all down. We'll see you. This has been Force Center. Bye, friends.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.